Hello, and welcome to Talking Global Infrastructure. In this episode, we're looking at findings from our new Pulse Sentiment Survey that we conduct alongside our members, Alvarez and Marcel. I'm Matt Dickinson, Head of Communications and Marketing at the Global Infrastructure Investor Association, and I'm pleased to be joined by A&M's Kate Natinho, who coordinates development of Pulse Research, and Managing Directors Wayne Jeffson, Jay Moody, and Jason Clatworthy. Thanks for taking the time to join us, everyone. Kate, I wonder if you can kick us off with an overview of who's involved in the Pulse study and what it covers.
Yeah, A&M teamed up with GIIA a few years ago to develop a survey and report that would reflect the sentiments of infrastructure investors and highlight emerging themes or trends. We do this by surveying GIIA's members across the globe to provide a diverse perspective. It covers a wide range of topics from the fundraising environment and investment priorities to impacts of macroeconomic trends and barriers to investment. It is not only useful for GIIA's members to understand current sentiment, but also in discussions GIIA has with policy leaders throughout the world.
Thanks. That's a really helpful overview. And how long has the survey been running for now? Has it evolved over time as you've been conducting it?
Our first report was published in the spring of 2020. It started as a quarterly publication with two separate reports for Europe and the US. Because of the time required for senior leaders to complete the survey, we reduced the number of reports to twice a year to ensure full participation while still getting timely thinking from within the industry. So the Pulse report is now one global publication issued twice a year in the spring and fall. While the core of the survey has remained consistent to compare sentiment over time, each survey also seeks to capture views on one to two topical questions, which have included the impact of the pandemic, rising importance of ESG, and the drive for net zero.
That makes sense. And definitely in terms of our conversations with policymakers, having that international comparison across Europe and the Americas is really useful. So definitely makes sense to bring the two reports together in one global outlook. Turning to Wei and Jay now, what are some of the top line findings from this new Q2 2023 report?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I think if I was to distill it down into four or five key themes, I think the first thing I'd say is fundraising sentiment is clearly increasingly negative in both Europe and the US. Secondly, the cost of debt financing is having an impact on asset economics, which is really shifting transaction activity away from core and towards core plus investments. Next thing I'd say is that despite that, more funds are considering divestments, which, coupled with a rise in the number of funds looking to deploy capital, suggests a certain level of resilience in infrastructure transactions, at least compared to where we were thinking about things in Q4 22. The next thing I'd say is the US is clearly racing ahead as the most attractive geography for investment at the moment. The Nordics continues to be seen as a safe haven in turbulent times in Europe, while sentiment towards the UK is somewhat inconsistent. And I think the final thing I'd say is that in the last few surveys, communications infra has been the jewel in the crown of infrastructure and the most attractive sector, but it's now seeing some challenges and newer sectors such as sustainable asset classes around things like grid scale batteries and EV charging are picking up the reins as funds help to fund net zero. Jay, I don't know whether there's anything else you'd add to that from an overall themes perspective.
Yeah, Wayne, I think that's right. That's a good summary. I would say the survey indicates some continued concerns in the market as compared to all the other surveys we've done in the past, which typically had very positive sentiment. It's an interesting time to be an infrastructure investor for sure.
Thanks both. That's a really helpful overview and a lot for us to unpack there in terms of investors now looking at their internal rate of return, what we call their IRR, essentially the performance of their portfolio in the round and reassessing in the current climate. So as you say, with interest rates, inflation and borrowing rates high, some are moving away from what we call core assets, which might more closely track the returns of super safe investments such as bonds, and towards what we'd term core plus assets, where there's more potential for growth in asset value over time. And Jason, we also ask members about environmental, social and governance, as well as tax considerations within the survey. What are some of the key themes emerging in those areas?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clearly a very hot topic in the sector at the minute. And to be honest, it's become a non-negotiable area now, both from LPs when they're looking at investors trying to raise products, and just as importantly, down at the asset and portco levels, where the stakeholders are actually challenging owners now to improve the ESG across the board. Clearly, a big point around this is the net zero aims, and that's on everyone's lips, all both managers at their own level and within the portcos are implementing strategies across the board to aim for net zero targets. I think that's something we're seeing also on diligence, actually. People are asking, as part of the acquisition process, what are you doing around net zero and improving your ESG platform? On the S side of ESG, clearly an emerging area and a trend where diversity, both from a recruitment and or approach to market, is being pushed along. Clearly not initiatives around improving the breadth of talent onboarded is very high on the priority list, both at both the manager level and the asset level, which is clearly only to be encouraged. I think around the tax policy that people are adopting, clearly, given the times we're in at the minute, this is a risk for clients. They obviously look to hold these assets for the long term and want predictable, stable cash flows. And when we're in uncertain economic times, not surprisingly, governments tinker with the tax profiles, etc., and introduce new tax policies, some sort of windfall taxes, etc. So it does cause concerns for our investors in the sector, particularly when they're holding over the long term. And you've only got to look across the world, really, not just in Europe. Generally, corporate tax rates are heading up, income tax rates are going up, VAT rates are going up. And there's always mention around, is the taxation of carry going to be amended? So clearly risks on the horizon on from a tax perspective. We also have new things coming in like Pillar 2, which I'm sure our listeners will be very conscious of, which is the aim to include a global minimum tax rate of around 15%. And then more from a holding perspective and how our clients look to do deals, the implementation of ATAD 3 and how they look to hold investments, particularly in Europe, through their existing platforms is coming under increasing scrutiny from European tax authorities. So, yeah, tax very high on the agenda and a key component of the ESG profile of our clients and their assets.
Thanks, Jason. That's really helpful. Clearly a lot for investors to navigate, and obviously in such a uncertain climate, actually the need for that fairness and stability within the tax system is greater than ever. And also interesting to hear your reflections there on how limited partners are considering the ESG side of things when they're identifying funds to be involved in their investment strategies. Turning back to Wayne and Jay now, I mean, generally speaking, investors are more pessimistic about their ability to raise both debt and equity, essentially new finance and funds, than they have been at any point since we started this survey. What's behind that general overarching concern from investors?
Yeah, Matt, I think the primary concern is rising interest rates. Not only are rising interest rates causing challenges with regard to the economics of the actual projects, which are typically very capital intensive, but it's also causing a reallocation risk for investors. You know, for example, the rapid rise of interest rates in the last 6 months, there are many core infrastructure equity funds that have raised targeted IRRs that are fairly comparable to the risk-free rates in today's environment. So if you have that choice, it may cause investors to focus on lower risk investments for a similar return. We've also had a few shocks to the banking system, which is worth noting. Since the last survey, we've had several. The largest one was SVB's failure. But in general, the concerns around short-term liquidity seem to be kind of slowing down the velocity of money. And so lending standards are tight and syndication is more challenging than in the past.
And in terms of looking country by country, because as part of the survey, we ask our members to tell us how they're feeling about specific markets across the Americas and Europe. We're seeing the US is top of the investor sentiment table. Again, it has been for a few quarters. And it's actually really now streets ahead of most other markets in America and Europe in terms of general investor sentiment. What's really behind that trend?
Yeah, the U.S. economy continues to roar in the face of a wall of worries. It's pretty exciting for us in the U.S. We hope to see if that will continue in the new higher interest rate environment. Some of the consumer strength is on the back of COVID-19 incentives that were provided years ago. And more recently, the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 includes some efforts to invest in domestic energy production, manufacturing, and reduction of carbon emissions by roughly 40% by 2030. And so it's all kind of ambitious programs that the government has put forward that have a lot of interest, I think, to infrastructure investors. So we'll see how those incentives in the IRA are influence infrastructure investors in the future.
Sounds like there's a lot of positive activity going on in the US then. And in terms of across the pond, Wayne, what are some of the notable trends in Europe this quarter?
Yeah, Matt, I think as I alluded to in the opening comments, that the Nordic continues to be the most sought after market in Europe, while sentiment in other countries, you know, pretty much showed a uniform decline survey on survey. It seems that the Nordics is seen as a safe haven in these turbulent times. There was only one European region to note an improved period-on-period sentiment, and that was indeed the Nordics. In terms of other aspects, investor sentiment towards the UK, at least from investors that are not UK-based, continues to be inconsistent. You know, there are a number of factors here, but you know, on the face of it, the value of sterling is lowering UK asset values for overseas buyers, which should, in theory, increase attractiveness. And whilst, you know, there's clearly been some bounce back in sentiment towards the UK compared to the doldrums of Q4 when political turmoil was at its height in the UK, the UK's political and regulatory environment continues to be seen as challenging. And I think that is dampening appetite for UK assets and particularly core regulated UK assets.
That all makes sense. And I wonder if we could come back now to some of the points you raised in your opening remarks about the impacts of particularly interest rates in terms of both making it more expensive to raise finance, but also increasing the appeal of, you know, more kind of safe haven, very, very low risk assets. You talked a bit about the move from core to core plus within strategies. And I mean, generally in this report, we're seeing an uptick in both plans to divest, sell assets, and deploy capital to invest proactively. So I wonder if you could unpack that a bit more for us in terms of why this seemingly quite significant shift in portfolios this quarter compared to last.
Yep, sure. I think perhaps we need to take a step back a little bit and contextualize. If you think about the timing of the last survey, it was very much at the time of peak uncertainty. Inflation was beginning to bite, both in Europe and in the US. Europe particularly was heading for a winter where a huge energy crisis was anticipated. And now, whilst it was less significant than anticipated, it still had a large impact. Interest rates were just starting to rise, and at least in the UK, which I've mentioned before, political uncertainty was at a peak. And I think what did that mean? It mean funds naturally took a pause as they were in Q4 last year after what had been, you know, an historically busy period through 2021 and early 2022, and they took that time to focus on the impacts of inflation, energy, interest rates, etc., on their portfolios, and took a rest to see how things played out. Now, this survey, to some extent, therefore highlights an unwind of perhaps what was an overcorrection in the responses to the previous survey. In addition, I guess with fundraising proving difficult, now is probably a good time to demonstrate that your existing funds can stand out as one of the winners in the sector. You can point to strong returns on existing investments through disposals of existing assets, and also you can demonstrate that you're successfully deploying capital through new investments. All of these things taken with other aspects can help you as a fund demonstrate that you're the right fund to deploy or to place your capital for the next fund.
Yes, Wayne, I totally agree. Demonstrating some wins through disposals could be helpful as in this fundraising environment where it's a little bit more challenging than it has been in the past. Displaying a strong track record will always be a differentiator for investors. The other thing I'll point out is that some very large infrastructure funds have been raised over the last several years. Some of these are 2.5 to 3 times the prior funds. So a slowdown in activity will most likely only change the timing of the capital deployment for these funds, and they'll be pushed out into the future, but those funds are still expected to be invested. So I think this latest sentiment of more velocity of transactions is where both of those items meet. Number one, you have a desire to realize investment returns on past investments so you can demonstrate a positive track record. And number two, for newer funds, those larger funds are looking to put funds to work.
Sure. And again, that's really the big international picture. I mean, when we look at sector by sector sentiment, which is another thing we ask about within the survey, which industries have most or least appeal to investors at the moment?
Yeah, Matt, the story for the last few years continues to be true. Communications and renewable assets are still very much so in favor. The interesting thing in this survey is the fall of transportation assets to an unfavorable view. I think it's driven by higher cost of capital, wage pressure for workers, and easing of supply chain constraints that are reducing pricing power for some of these transportation providers. It's interesting to me because the negative movements were pretty similar for respondents in both the Americas and in Europe. Wayne, any thoughts from your perspective on industries that are the most or least interest right now?
Yeah, Jay, I think your point on the communication sector is interesting because at least from a European perspective, there's definitely been some dampening in the attractiveness of and the sentiment towards that sector. And clearly it's retracted from some of the previous highs. You know, it has been the standout sector for the last 3 or 4 surveys since COVID. And I think in the fiber broadband sector particularly, this is reflective of a combination of headwinds, increased construction costs, supply chain constraints around manpower and raw materials, and indeed stubbornly lower than expected penetration rates. And all of this has impacted the network deployment of these assets and has led to some of the alternative networks, the altnets, struggling for capital. I think we're seeing the beginning of a long-anticipated consolidation in the sector, particularly in the UK, as some of the winners seek to take out the lower-performing parties in that space. Over and above that, I think other sustainable assets outside what you would call core sustainable generation of wind, solar, hydro. That was the most attractive sector in Europe. And I think that is indicative of a raft of fundraising for grid-scale battery rollout and for EV projects looking for initial funding or indeed initial growth funding. And that certainly seems to be a sector that's attracting a lot of investor interest and indeed is a sector where I've been spending quite a lot of my transaction time over the last 6 months.
That makes sense. And I think really positive to hear that there is so much investor appetite for these technologies that will play such a big role in decarbonization and ultimately getting us to net zero worldwide in the decades ahead. And talking of the future, I mean, it's clearly been a challenging and slightly unusual start to the year for a lot of infrastructure investors. In terms of the rest of 2023, how do you see the next 6 months playing out?
Clearly, there have been some challenges around fundraising and availability of debt since Q4 22, which rolled over into the first part of this year, which impacted activity on infra and other sectors. But I think we should reflect on infra in the wider context of the overall transaction activity in the market. Big PE, consumer and financial services have all been very, very quiet, but infra activity has shown some resilience, at least in the core plus space, and I do expect that to continue. I don't have a crystal ball, but that's where I see the activity in the second half of the year. Core deals particularly are challenging at the moment, as Jay mentioned, due to the rising cost of debt. The gap between the cost of debt and equity returns has narrowed, with no sign yet of core equity return requirements being adjusted in this subsector. I think this is driving a heightened focus on core plus sectors with higher returns, and that in itself is leading to a continuing focus on sustainable assets and energy transition assets that I highlighted previously. And this is where I see most of the activity in the second half of 2023. Jay, I don't know whether you've got anything to add to that.
Yeah, Wayne, I wish I knew the answer to this question. There was a lot of optimism about the second half of this year earlier in the year, and I still hear positive signs recently from investment bankers and investors that we speak with. We've started to see an uptick in calls related to new projects, and many of those are sell-side projects, which can be a leading indicator that deal volumes may increase in the second half of 2023. What happens with the core infrastructure raising will be interesting, to your point, and I think it'll be somewhat dependent upon where interest rates shake out in the long term.
Thank you very much, Kate, Jay, Wayne, and Jason, for taking the time to join us and share that really insightful look at our new Pulse survey. The full Q2 2023 report can be found on our website. That brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to follow Talking Global Infrastructure on Spotify and iTunes. See you next time.